From 76 of July to November of 76, she was deputy director of the Carter Mundell presidential campaign, the principal liaison with all constituent groups, major political strategists, and responsible for general administration of election efforts. January 76 to July 76, she was deputy political director of the Carter primary campaign, political liaison for all primaries, constituent group coordinator with emphasis on environmental groups, and in charge of staffing for the general election. Our speaker today has held many appointments in her experience, and some of the activities by appointment are the following: Chairman of the Senior Policy Advisory Group, Resource Conservation Committee, Chairperson of the United States Delegation, U.S.-Japan Environmental Agreement, Chairperson for the Senior Review Group for the Fifth Year Review of Great Lakes Water Quality Agreement. Also appointed as a member under Secretary's Group and a member of the Interagency Council for Minority Business Enterprise. Ladies, won't you please join me in welcoming our distinguished lecturer, the first of our series this morning, Ms. Barbara Blum.
I hate to give a lecture. There are so few of us, I feel it should be more informal and we should just talk. Would you rather do that? Or is it going to complicate things because of your...
Go ahead.
Of the cassette?
Any way you want to.
Okay, well, I have this. You know, when you get to a certain place, you all of a sudden somebody starts writing your speeches. And it's not always what you want to say. And I don't like to think of myself as a lecturer. I'd like to really relate to... How many of you here are delegates? None of you? The delegates are... Well, I'm a delegate and I'm not there. So I thought maybe you'd join me. How many of you here are with EPA? Uh-huh. Almost all of you. So that I'm wondering if you don't want to have questions about the Environmental Protection Agency. But let me tell you a little bit first about what we're doing for women at the Environmental Protection Agency. One of the things, for the first time, we do have women at the top. We have two women who are regional administrators for the first time. We have women who are, we have one right now, and I'm hoping that we're going to have more women deputy regional administrators. We have the head of the Office of Public Awareness, or Public Affairs, is a woman. Our general counsel is a woman, Joan Bernstein, really outstanding person. They all are. We have the head of our Office of International Affairs is a woman. When we had our meeting of top management and EPA, we looked around the room and one-third of the people there were women in the top management job, something that we're really proud of because in the past there haven't been any women. As a matter of fact, if I can just kind of go through here to tell you a little bit about what's happened in government, if I can find the place in this long diatribe, just to tell you a little bit of the difference that's happening in our country now. During the previous two administrations, there were 35% of the employees were women. Now, that hasn't changed too much. I think the figure is about the same now. But less than 0.3% were in the supergrades or the executive levels. For example, on Election Day in 1976, just last November, a year ago November, there were no women in the executive schedule and the Agency for International Development, and the Commission on Civil Rights, and the Community Services Administration, and the Interior Department, and the Justice Department, and the Labor Department. There were no women in the executive schedules in the Office of Management and Budget. There were no women in the Postal Rate Commission. There were none on the Renegotiation Board. And although the statistics for Carter's first year are not going to be out for several months, I think that the results are going to be clearly evident, although they're not going to be exactly what we want. The Carter administration has done several things now that let me just go over with them briefly. They've created a Woman in Business Task Force for the first time. They've created a graduate fellowship program for minorities and women. and that again is a first time. They supported civil service reforms to increase employment for women. This will be coming out very shortly, and it will remove some of the veterans' benefits so that women won't get squeezed out always in the process of selection or so often in the process of selection. We have signed regulations to prohibit sex discrimination and sex role stereotyping in vocational education programs. We've improved the administration of Title IX and prohibitions against sex discrimination and federal grants. We're establishing a Justice Department task force to review all federal laws and to remove all vestiges of sex discrimination. It's going to be a hard job, but it's going to get done. The administration is supporting an affirmative action program for women and minorities. Very much so. We get little handwritten notes from Jimmy Carter all the time, and that's the kind of guidance that we need from the top to really be able to make a difference. We're supporting the affirmative action programs for women and minorities in every way. With regard to women in top policy positions, right now 64 or 12% of the 552 Schedule C positions are held by women. Now, that's not nearly enough, and that's not what we're aiming for, but it's a beginning. You know who the people are. But it's significant to note that the presidential appointments doesn't include, and this is something I think is really makes a difference, that one-third of the women on the, well, one-third of the people on the domestic council are women for the first time. In past years, there have been none, or there have been one or two scattered. And then there are key White House aides that are not included in this figure, people like Midge, Jane Frank, Margaret McKenna. All three of them are here from the White House this week, and I think you'll be meeting them in the next couple of days. And the list of women goes on and on, but at the same time, we're going to have to keep the pressure on to make sure that this occurs. I think one of the places that we can put the most pressure on is by recruiting women in middle management ranks so that we can get people moving up to the top. We have a recruiting booth here today downstairs someplace. I haven't been able to find it yet, but I'm going down there right afterwards. to try to create women professionals, women toxicologists, women engineers, women attorneys, women business managers, so that we can start people on a mid-level and bring them up so that in the years to come in the Environmental Protection Agency, I expect that if the percentage of the population of women is 51.3, that 51.3 of our top people should be women. And that's what I am aiming for. Those of you who are in a region now where that's been dominated primarily by men, which has been true of all the regions, who have women regional administrators, I wonder, do you find a difference? And I hope you do. In the treatment of women. Because one of the most important things that we can do as women is to hold out our hand and bring our sisters along with us. In fact, that's really the key thing. I remember in years past when there were so few top jobs for women that when a woman got one, she'd get out on the end of the branch and shake it to keep the other women off because there was room for just that one token woman. Well, by God, those days have changed. And what I see happening now all over government, I see it in business and industry, I see it in civic organizations, is when one woman comes along, she holds her hand out and pulls along with her as many women as she can bring with her. This is something that we must all remember to do. We must concentrate on doing because it's going to make a difference in all of our lives and the lives of our children. Those of you who are particularly interested in the environment, as I am, I have two things I'm particularly interested in at this phase of my life. One is the environment, and the other is just as equally as strong, and that's the women's movement. I couldn't say that even though my job is deputy administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency, that I feel is any more important than my activity in the women's movement and my caring about the women's movement. I see my job as one way to help bring women along. And I think this is important for all of us and all of you out there in federal agencies, in community associations, in the League of Women Voters, wherever you are, that this is the thing that we must always emphasize. that once we get there along with a lot of other people who are women. And I think it's a very easy thing to do because we've all been through shared common experiences. Do you have any particular questions on anything? Yes. Sure, good. Well, not too much of that because a lot of people, a lot of men in the agency didn't have technical backgrounds but had legal backgrounds or business administration backgrounds. There is a certain amount of prejudice that I get still and probably always will, but it comes out in very subtle ways. One example that I have given in the past, and some of you may have heard, is the first time that Beth Sullivan, who's sitting back here, and I went to a town hall meeting. And this is where we go out to the public and hold press conferences and have a meeting where anybody can ask any question they want, say anything they want. Is that somebody from our press department met us at the door to where we were going to have the press conference and said, he was nervous, he was perspiring. And he called me over to the side and he said, look, just say, when you get up there, just say you're deputy administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency and don't say much else. Just say that and just wait for questions. So I got up and we had a really good press conference, and afterwards he was visibly relieved. I always got the impression that, in fact, I know that that was his prejudice, thinking that there was no way that I was going to be able to handle a press conference, for God's sake. And he's the kind of person who has always been for women's rights and always tried to promote women, but it was that kind of hidden prejudice that he had that I see at EPA an awful lot, people being overly protective. Beth? Oh, yes. Yes, another example that happened very recently. You know, they happen 10, 15 a day. So I'm glad Beth is here to remind me. Sometimes I tend to, because of the pain, to put them out of my mind. We had 20 or 30 Russians in town for the United States USSR Environmental Agreement this week. And the man who was head of it from the Russian side, the head of the Russian Environmental Protection Agency, said in his closing remarks that he was awfully glad that there were two women on the United States delegation because they were very decorative. And sitting on one side of this room are the Russians, and they all laugh. Ha, 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 ha. Sitting on the other side of the room are our EPA people, and I am not laughing. I am just glaring. And so one side of the room is laughing very hard, and the other side is not laughing at all. So I can at least say that we've come further than the Russians have. Mary Louise Ulig, who's sitting on the first row, has been very helpful at EPA. She's head of the Federally Employed Women for the District of Columbia. And Mae Walderhouse, who is our Federal Women's Coordinator, is the National President of Federally Employed Women. So we're trying to bring in the shakers and the movers, like Mary Louise and like May, in order to make clear throughout the agency that it isn't just rhetoric. Beth has been working on a short-term committee, which is completed now, to come out with a list of rules and regulations for the hiring of women and minorities. They worked together for about 3 months and came out with a set of directives just about as thick as the speech that I didn't give, but all very meaningful to try to remove the kind of bias we've had. We have been also, or will be, setting up, because most of the people during the hiring are still the men, because they're in the supervisory positions, to hold seminars for them, consciousness-raising seminars, regarding women and minorities. And I mean, the kind of thing that we want to set up is not just a lecture about how many statistics that you need to come up with and how many women or minorities you need to hire, but real encounter sessions so that they can come to grips with their own prejudices. Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, she's very right. One of the worst statistics that I've heard, and a very true one, is that in our country right now, one out of four of us can expect to get cancer during our lifetimes. Two-thirds of those will die of cancer. By next year, we expect the rate to be one out of three. These are our projections, with, again, the same rate, about two-thirds dying of cancer. The reason this is a scary thing is because between 60 and 90%, that's as close a handle as we can get on it now, between 60 and 90% of these cancers are environmentally induced by herbicides, by toxics in the air and in the water. It's true, I think, that we haven't been moving as rapidly on this as possible. There are several reasons for it, and we're remedying that now. One has been a staffing problem, which we've attacked two ways. One is through zero-based budgeting. We have reallocated more positions to the toxic substances area, which includes pesticides and herbicides. The other is that the president has given us 600 new employees, about half of which will be allocated to that program so that we can get it off the ground. Yes, it is. In the past, we've not had a lot of cooperation. Now, this is not true now, but in the past, we haven't had a lot of cooperation, and that's putting it mildly, from the Department of Agriculture. We have said Myrex is bad, and then they have said to the people who use the Myrex, not that bad. And so we've had this double pull. In fact, just last week, 2 weeks ago, we had a big fight in the Congress and Conference Committee on the pesticides bill, FIFRA, because there was a movement to put Myrex back in, where we know Myrex is highly carcinogenic. And we were able to fight that down simply by going to the congressmen one by one. They were all congressmen. That's right.
Another area would be international waterways and boundaries, where we have the high voltage line coming across.
Right.
And we also have across the Canadian border. And we are, both people on both sides are subjected to this.
Yes.
Well,
I agree with you. I think the cancer statistics underline that. And well, yeah, I don't know. I don't know which is worse, whether you come out mutated or you die of cancer. But they are things that we are working on very closely. The International Joint Commission is just now getting underway because of the new appointments being made. But there's going to be a tremendous emphasis in that on the particular issues that you were talking about. The Intergovernmental Committee has been meeting once a month to deal with these problems. We have been dealing with, I'm afraid sometimes we get our priorities out of order, and we have dealt with things like phosphates in the Great Lakes, when I think phosphates probably aren't the main problem there. If we could deal with all of our problems equally and didn't have to put priorities on them, we would need so many more employees. So what we're trying to do now is to restructure and to come up with a list of the worst chemicals and deal with those first, knowing that we can't deal with all of them, and that if we become too diffuse, we're not going to be able to do a good job with any of them. That, I'm afraid, is what we've done in the past. So we're now coming out with a priority list that we can attack. Helpless.
I mean, we are helpless because we're standing in front of bulldozers and we're being arrested, you know, day after day, kind of. But that, you know, that gets tiresome too.
I know. I've been there before. I came out of the citizens' movement. That's how I got started in the environmental business in about 1970, in much the same way that you are now. I always think it's ironic that I ended up here. Yes. She represents the Rachel Carlson Trust for the Living Environment. Rachel Carlson, excuse me.
I have the pleasure at this moment of representing EPA in the booth.
Marvelous.
I think it's appropriate for me to say now that I have become like you, and I've entered in the environmental movement since 1970, beginning at just the local level. And I would like to impress upon all of the people who come to meet us at this time the great importance of the local action feeding into the federal action.
Yes. I think that's a very good idea.
And by saying that years ago, when I returned from an overseas assignment, I decided I would like to have a permanent career in the Foreign Service. I went to the Department of State with a lot of wonderful letters of recommendation, I won't hesitate to say, and I was met by a young personnel officer who said to me in the very first sentence, "Well, you know, we do not care to have women in the Foreign Service." Now, that's only relatively a few years ago, and I didn't have the to run for my congressman or the editor of the Washington
It would have helped.
So I took a different opportunity. I only tell this to you to encourage you and make you see that we have made wonderful progress. And I'm so proud of women like these two who are here at the platform before us for the leadership they have given and the effective accomplishments. And I can only say, let's all stand behind.
There's a point. Thank you. I think that applies to all the women in this room. There's a point that you made that I'd like to touch on just briefly, and that is public participation. If there were not public participation in the Environmental Protection Agency, there really wouldn't be anything to keep us straight, to let us know what the people are thinking, because sometimes when you get up on the 12th floor of an office building, you get from people what they think that you want to hear, not what you need to hear, not what you should hear, and not really what's going on. But unfortunately, too much ass-kissing goes on in the rarefied air of management in government. And this is why we're putting a tremendous emphasis on public participation, because I want to tell you, if there's anybody who tells you how it is and tells you when you're full of, it's the public, and that's exactly what you need to hear. One of the things I'd like to see, too, is, and one of the reasons we have a booth here, the environmental movement has been composed in large part by women who have been pushing it along since 1970. And I'm interested in those women coming into the agency and coming into state agencies, coming in wherever they can as professionals now, because it seems to me that all those years of voluntary service qualify people just as well for entry into an environmental protection agency, and sometimes make them better qualified than people who have had a narrow background in how to lay a sewer pipe, for instance. Yes, you are next, and then I'll... I said this is something that has changed now. Oh, yes, very definitely so. The new administration is very positive and has been cooperative in herbicides and pesticides, and we're beginning to get a real dialogue going where they're not now undermining our rules and regulations. In fact, are being very supportive of it.
Mm-hmm. For whatever else, before they make any real move to take a pesticide off the market or to take some drug off the market, whatever the case may
right.
be. And it seems to me that there's a very close correlation between affirmative action for, you know, equal opportunity purposes and affirmative action kinds of programs to prevent before the fact in terms of the entire EPA kind of business.
Mm-hmm. Yes, this is
more so a matter of trying to stop the diseases and deaths and whatever that have already been.
Well, I think the two relate very closely. One of the things we're trying to do is coordinate government agencies. We have so many people in the act that we can't wait for reorganization to occur. We have put together an interagency group that is making its own rules and regulations now on an informal basis. The Federal Drug Administration, Consumer Product Safety Commission, the EPA, and Beth, what's the fourth one? And OSHA, right. so that we can attack both inside and outside. You know, OSHA deals with toxics in the workplace. We deal with toxics outside the workplace. Somebody has to go to four different agencies in order to get their forms filled out and to get some kind of a ruling. So we're doing our own internal reorganization on an informal basis where we have agreed that we will have a common computer bank, we will have common forms, common testing materials. It'll be a one-stop kind of operation because we think that it's going to be much more effective that way. We are now in the business of preventative health, of public health, as much as any agency is any place in the world. Because whenever we can attack a herbicide or a pesticide or take a toxic substance off the market, what we're doing is preventing something that could occur. Yes, somebody up here had.
What kind of strong support do you see in the prior administration coming for some of the environmental issues? And what kind of weak support do you see coming from them? Where can
okay.
Part of that, where can we...